Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Agency, The 4-Point Plan, F-R-E-E, for all children to overcome the victimhood narrative and discover their pathway to power, by Ian V. Roe. Narrated by Ian V. Roe. Publisher's note: this audiobook includes bonus material. Please visit tantor.com and type agency into the search box. Follow the link to the book's page. Then under the supplemental content section, please enter the access code LEARN, and then click the unlock button to access the bonus material. The code should be entered in all lowercase letters. All figures and appendices referenced in this audiobook can be found in the bonus material. To my parents, Eula and Vincent, and my family, Sylvia, Camille, and Oscar. Invictus. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. William Ernest Henley. Foreword by Yuval Levin. If Ian Roe did not exist, America would have to invent him. As this book demonstrates, and as Roe's extraordinary career has shown, he is moved by an unwavering commitment to put a flourishing life within the reach of young Americans who start out lacking the opportunities they deserve. That dogged commitment somehow renders Roe immune to both the rigid orthodoxies and the ephemeral fads that so often disfigure our social policy debates. It lets him cut through the culture war rhetoric that can easily make our problems seem insoluble and chart a path forward that takes seriously the insights of assorted partisans who think they have nothing in common. That may be what stands out most about this book. It has been written in a moment when every old consensus around the challenge of mobility appears to have fractured, and our debates break down along a stark disagreement about how change can happen. But it persuasively demonstrates that we have more than just those two familiar and simplistic options before us. Some people, mostly on the right, argue that only personal change can make a change of circumstances possible, which means that young Americans who start out at the economic bottom can rise only by virtue of their own effort, discipline, and energy. Young Americans looking to improve their prospects need somehow to hold themselves apart from the breakdown that too often surrounds them and to act on their own to make the sorts of decisions that can help them achieve an ordered and successful life. Other people, mostly on the left, suggest that social change must always precede personal change, so that no one can really transform his or her own life. Instead, all we can do is wait for others to effect broad systemic change or seek somehow to make ourselves part of such change through political action. Each side of this dispute views the other as unrealistic and cynical, and indeed, each side's view has increasingly come to be mostly a reaction to the other, rather than a response to the real circumstances of young Americans who need a better shot at success. But because Roe is focused on those young people and not on one side or the other of our bifurcated politics, he can see that both are partially right, but also that being partially right is not enough. He offers another path that takes the best of both. Pure self-reliance is a myth, he tells us. But systemic change without personal change is hollow and dispiriting and ultimately cannot work. It's true that people need to act on their own behalf, but individuals do not develop such dogged self-determination until someone or some institution first helps them grasp that their effort is integral to achieving that goal. It is this core conviction that allows them to endure as they encounter barriers along the way. This precondition is agency. In other words, there is a vast space between the individual alone and the society as a whole. That space is where we actually live our lives, and it is where positive change can happen. It is a space filled with institutions, from the family to the school, church, work, civic associations, charitable groups, the private economy, and the sphere of local political action. And those institutions need to be filled with people who want to help form young Americans for success in life. The work of these institutions can give those young Americans a sense that their fate is in their own hands, and yet that they are not alone. We might call that recognition a sense of agency. And as Rowe so powerfully shows, agency is not a synonym for independence or for energy. It is more than that. Just as velocity is not just speed, but rather speed and direction, agency is more than free will. It is free will guided by a moral sense of right and wrong, he writes. That sense, developed through the combination of family, religion, education, and entrepreneurship, the free framework that Rowe introduces in this book, is the missing ingredient in the lives of countless Americans, and not just those enduring economic hardship. A shortage of agency is a defining fact of contemporary American life. It afflicts the young in particular, as Rowe puts it, from kids in low-income communities to those in the wealthiest of neighborhoods who nevertheless find themselves leading lonely, rudderless lives. In that sense, this book almost sells itself short. It is about more than a path to opportunity, and it is a gift to more than just young Americans afflicted by narratives of victimhood and paralysis. This book is a gift to all those in the rising generation who are baffled by the ominous pessimism that our culture now projects at them from every direction, and find themselves unable to envision a future that speaks to their highest longings. They deserve better from us, and Rowe offers them better by helping them see where a morally meaningful sense of direction might be found. In the end, Rowe's framework is a call for commitment. People don't thrive by getting what they want. We thrive by being what others need. Only by living our lives embedded in commitments to family, religion, schooling, work, community, and country can we really become what we are capable of being. Narratives of narcissism and narratives of victimhood both seek to distract us from the possibility of such flourishing and persuade us that there is nothing we can do. A recovery of agency would show us that there is not only something we can do, but something we should do, and which is worth throwing ourselves into. This exceptional book charts the path to that recovery, and our guide, Ian Rowe, knows that it is possible to travel that path because he has seen it in his own life and has made it possible for countless children through his work. Your sense of what's possible will be changed by the book you've listened to. And when you've heard it, you'll want to make sure that others do too. Introduction. Man does not simply exist, but always decides what his existence will be, what he will become the next moment. By the same token, every human being has the freedom to change at any instant. Viktor Frankl. It was a late September night in 2015, and my wife Sylvia and I were at the Richard Rogers Theater in New York City. The smash hit Hamilton was weeks into a Broadway run that continues to the time of this writing. That night's performance was a fundraiser for the 10th anniversary of Public Prep, a network of public charter elementary and middle schools primarily located in the South Bronx. As Public Prep CEO at the time, I was, of course, filled with gratitude that the Hamilton family was helping to raise funds for our schools, schools for largely low-income and Black or Hispanic kids who live a short subway ride but a world away from Manhattan's bright lights. But that evening's Hamilton performance hit home for me in other ways. Like Alexander Hamilton, who is celebrated in the musical, my parents, Vincent and Eula, had come to America from the Caribbean, Jamaica, to start a new life and seize the opportunities their new land offered. Like Alexander Hamilton, they had succeeded beyond their wildest dreams and built a great life, an American life, for me and my brother. We, the sons of two Black Jamaican immigrants, are Alexander Hamilton's children, America's children, no less than Vincent and Eula's. And here's the other realization that washed over me that September night. The musical may celebrate the incandescent Alexander Hamilton, but it also celebrates our nation. Despite all its sometimes grotesque imperfections, this unfinished symphony, which allowed a young emigre from the Caribbean to rise. Individual drive and determination to make a difference in your life, I am not throwing away my shot, only works in a place where even orphan immigrants can leave their fingerprints and rise up. More precisely, it only works in a place where everyone, including orphaned immigrants, believes that they can leave their fingerprints and rise up. Take away that belief, and you take away agency. If you tell young people the system is irredeemably rigged against them, pound it into them that they are victims of systemic racism or large economic forces, and that they have no opportunity, and there is nothing they can do to make a difference, then do not be surprised if they act, or fail to act, accordingly. That is not what we did at Public Prep, and that is not what we will do at Vertex Partnership Academies, the new network of public charter high schools I am currently developing to open in the Bronx in 2022. I think the seeds of this book were planted that night. What is agency? I'll flesh out the concept in chapter one, but my short definition is that it is the force of your free will guided by moral discernment. It is the force that closes the delta between isness and oughtness in our lives, what is and what ought to be. It is the conviction that we are active players in our own story. As Martin Luther King Jr. once said, not simply flotsam and jetsam in the river of life. Agency is learning to see ourselves not as victims of our circumstance, but rather as architects of our own better futures, and to do so even in the face of real obstacles. Agency is a concept, a character force, a mindset, and an outlook that is threatened in our young people today. In October 2021, the Archbridge Institute think tank released an eye-catching report on existential agency, showing that only 39% of American adults under age 25 think that they have the power to live a meaningful life. Compare this to the 63% of all American adults who think so. This is despite the fact that young people are traditionally more idealistic and energetic than their elders and have their whole life ahead of them. This is also despite the fact that social, scientific, and technological progress has given the rising generation greater access to knowledge and more opportunities. Moreover, Archbridge Institute Senior Research Fellow Clay Rutledge, who authored the study, points out that these findings align with other research showing that young adults are increasingly anxious and afraid. Indeed, a global UNICEF study of 21 countries released in November 2021 showed that 56% of Americans aged 15 to 24 said that children today would be worse off economically than their parents. That prediction by young Americans was a worse forecast than all but five of the remaining countries studied. According to Rutledge, this pessimism is a barrier to agency and ultimately human progress because people are less inclined to take risks, explore unfamiliar ideas, be tolerant of those who are different, and have the confidence and optimistic mindset needed to take on big challenges when they are anxious and afraid. In Chapter 2, I describe two visions that currently compete for dominance. One, which is by far the more popular, especially in education circles, is the blame-the-system mindset. Impediments to young people achieving the American dream are primarily, if not solely, due to insurmountable institutional and systemic barriers, racism, classism, and the like. The other is the blame the victim mindset. Roadblocks to realizing the American dream are primarily, if not solely, due to an individual's bad choices or lack of effort. Both visions are wrong, each in their own way. I will make the case that a blame-the-system perspective not only fails to stand up to analytical scrutiny, but also harms and disempowers the kids who most need our help, like the students in my charter schools. It robs them of agency. On the other hand, a blame-the-victim perspective that simply calls on individuals to make better choices or work harder is insufficient, as it does not acknowledge the necessity of local, character-forming institutions to help young people build agency. Yes, Horatio Alger rags-to-riches stories make for compelling reading. Exceptional individuals from humble beginnings who by pluck and determination pull themselves up by their own bootstraps and achieve their dreams. What is not to like about these uniquely American stories? And there are so many of them. But pure self-reliance is a myth. Individuals do not develop such dogged self-determination until someone or some institution first helps them grasp that their effort is integral to achieving that goal. It is this core conviction that allows them to endure as they encounter barriers along the way. This precondition is agency. Simply put, behavior follows belief. As necessity is the mother of invention, so agency gives rise to determination. Somewhere prior to what Carol Dweck calls the growth mindset, the confidence in one's ability to achieve a goal, and what Angela Duckworth calls grit, dedication to mastering that goal in the long run, is what I call agency. A moral dimension distinguishes agency from a growth mindset and grit. Just as velocity is not just speed, but rather speed and direction, agency is more than free will. It is free will guided by a moral sense of right and wrong. Reverend Martin Luther King once argued that education that stops at efficiency might prove to be the greatest menace to society. He said that the most dangerous criminal may be the man gifted with reason but with no morals. Underscoring that a growth mindset and grit alone could produce the next despot, someone without healthy character formation. No, agency is the character-based strength that young people can tap into as a source of morally directed power, and our kids do not achieve this by themselves. Young people do not typically find success or meaning in isolation. They need social support from vibrant, well-functioning, mediating structures. They need the help of our families, schools, houses of worship, nonprofit organizations, and community groups to build agency. In Chapter 3, I set out my third way. Fundamental to my thinking is Yuri Bronfenbrenner's bioecological theory. This groundbreaking psychologist and father of Head Start established the vital factors that drive human development, for good or ill. The most influential? The immediate microsystem a child lives in and the deeply personal connection with the one institution that bears primary responsibility for socialization in our society, the American family. Family matters. More specifically, the structure and stability of the family within which a child is raised matters monumentally in the acquisition of agency. I will make the case over several chapters that the breakdown in the two-parent family in the United States, particularly the explosion of households headed by single mothers in their early 20s, explains national woes that are too often and too easily attributed to race or other increasingly less relevant factors. As Isabel Sawhill of the Brookings Institution says, social policy faces an uphill battle as long as families continue to fragment and children are deprived of the resources of two parents. To usher in a new era of American agency in which the rising generation becomes the master of their own fate, we must simultaneously launch a movement that encourages young people of all races to adopt a new cultural norm concerning education, entrepreneurship, hard work, faith, responsible parenthood, and the timing of strong family formation. Shifting cultural norms may seem daunting, but we as a nation have done this before. In chapters 8 and 9, I will describe how in the early 1990s, during a time of deep political divide, a small coalition of normally warring factions came together to forge a consensus to address this crisis of skyrocketing teen pregnancy rates, and over the ensuing 30 years, achieved one of the greatest public health achievements on record. The past can be prologue. There is a way, a third way, which I call free. F-R-E-E. Free is a framework based on family, religion, education, and entrepreneurship that is designed to build agency in all our children, from kids in low-income communities to those in the wealthiest of neighborhoods who nevertheless can find themselves leading lonely, rudderless lives. Free is built upon four pillars designed to unleash a morally informed free will, agency, in our children so they are not bound by a challenging past nor present and can envision a better future. One key component of free that is particularly important in the formation of strong families across generations is the success sequence, a series of life decisions that involves first graduating from high school, then securing full-time work, then getting married, and then having children. Among millennials, evidence shows that following this series of decisions creates a 97% chance of avoiding poverty. Despite concerns that imparting this information to young people might be viewed as condescending, overwhelmingly large majorities of all Americans, 77%, and American parents, 76%, support teaching students that young people who get at least a high school degree, have a job, and get married before having children are more likely to be financially secure and to avoid poverty in later life. But just teaching this information in schools is not enough. The other key component of free is the enlistment of society's mediating structures, schools, churches, civic associations, neighborhoods, and most importantly, the family, in helping our kids to achieve agency. We must offer a hopeful path forward, a strategy to defeat the debilitating narratives that many kids, who are too often kids of color or from low-income neighborhoods, have no power to exercise their individual agency nor achieve better outcomes in their own lives. I believe we have a moral imperative to help our young people understand the series of life decisions within their control that create the greatest likelihood of success. In short, my third way recognizes that young people do not have to be trapped between the heavy burden of having to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps alone and the immobilizing delay of having to wait for someone else to effect massive systemic change. That is a false choice when, in fact, we can be free. As a child of stable, married parents, a proud product of the New York City public school system K-12, and a longtime leader running high-performing schools in low-income communities, I know what is possible to achieve when we refuse to lump kids into preordained social or racial categories. I know what is possible when adults resist practicing the soft bigotry of low expectations at the expense of the children in their care. From the time I completed my education, I chose a professional road less traveled in order to help kids of all races find their inner greatness. I have had remarkable opportunities at premier institutions involved in education, media, government, and philanthropy to shape the attitudes and behaviors of the rising generation, especially the most economically disadvantaged. At each step along the way, whether at my own entrepreneurial startups or at top-flight organizations in the for-profit, non-profit, and public sectors, including Teach for America, Third Millennium Media, the White House, MTV, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Public Prep, and now Vertex Partnership Academies, I learned the key individual and institutional factors that positioned young people to control their own destiny or not to control it. Little did I know that this lifelong journey would be an extended research project on how to empower the rising generation to overcome a victimhood narrative and carve out their own pathway to power. I have seen what works and what does not work from inside those mediating institutions that, as sociologist Peter L. Berger and Reverend Richard Newhouse wrote, stand between the individual in his private sphere and the large institutions of the public sphere. I believe we all must abandon the poisonous notion that any disparity we see between certain groups must be due to discrimination of that group, as opposed to other factors that transcend that group designation, which are far more determinative, most notably, family structure. My hope here is to help young people learn the ways in which they can bridge.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?